Sometimes Forex trading can be a wild and woolly place to be. But Forex trading doesn't have to be the Badlands for you, partner. Instead, hunker down and bend your ear. You'll be burning the breeze in no time here at the Truth About FX Podcast.
Okay, welcome. It's Walter here, and today we have a very special guest. This is one of our presenters at the live Forex conference in London in 2017, and this is Raul. Raul, welcome. First of all, welcome, and thanks so much for spending time here. It's Raul Gonzalez. Hi. I know you've been trading for a long time, Raul, and you are currently trading for a bank. Is that right?
That's correct. Hi, hi, Walter. Thank you. Thank you for the invite. I'm very happy to share my experience and my journey, if you like. I'm working for a bank. I've started trading in. I've always traded in London, except for a 2-year stint in Madrid. I think I joined the markets in 1994, and I've done all kinds of. I've always concentrated specialized in FX and money markets, or the short-term rates, up to 2 years. And I've always been what you would call, and I can explain this later, a flow trader. Whereas the position I have now is more of a prop trader, where I see no customer flows, and what I make is just on the back of the risk I take, which makes it a bit more challenging, you could say. But you don't have to worry about a big customer flow, waking up in the middle of the night because you get an email because you have to come in first thing next day to cover a big customer order. So it has its advantages and disadvantages. You have more freedom because if you don't take risks, you don't make money.
Right. So that differs from what you did in the past then.
Yes. Briefly, this is something that I can talk more in length at the conference, but the way banks operate has changed dramatically. And I'd say there is the world of banking pre-Lehman, so pre-2008, and then there's banking from 2014, I would say, which is over-regulation. It's very difficult. I mean, banks are not supposed to take risk. In order to, if you're a commercial banker, you want to take risk, you have to get very creative. The way traders are compensated has also changed. Before you would have a decent base salary, but you were incentivized to take risk and you would get a percentage. It's never a black and white formula, but if the bank made money, if your desk made money, and you made your budget, well then you would get a piece of the pie. Whereas now, unless you trade for a hedge fund or a boutique or another type of fund, non-banking, you're not supposed to take risk. Whatever flows you get from a customer, you're supposed to back-to-back. You have to show compliance, the conversations, prove that you've traded, that you haven't front-run customer orders, so on and so forth. And I talk to traders that are FX traders that used to be flow traders, and they're obviously not happy because there's just no upside for them anymore.
So to explain it for those people who are unfamiliar, so like you're saying, it's sort of the pendulum swung the other way, and there's too much regulation things have swung the other way basically. So Raul, just so the other traders listening to this understand. What you're explaining is a couple of things here. One is that the regulations have swung so much the other way for the banks where you work that, they're watching your every move. And two, the whole style of trading that you're doing now is different to what it was in the past. So in the past, correct me if I'm wrong, you were able to capitalize on the knowledge that you had about when these big orders are coming through from your customers, right?
No. It's not the case for me, as I'm now a prop trader, so I see no flows. But even as a flow trader, the scrutiny is just ridiculous, to the point where every conversation, you're not allowed to use a mobile in a dealer room. Every email is monitored. Every conversation you have on Bloomberg, which is the means that traders use to communicate and with other banks and other salespeople. That's checked by compliance every night, and tapes. So your hands are tied when it comes to had abused the fixings. You know, the FX fix, the you know, the interest rate, the LIBORs. It's just fascinating how traders just got too greedy, which sort of leads me to the point I was making before about banking or trading jobs before 2009. There was this, everyone was incentivized to take risk no matter what, at any cost, and you would run over customers, you would run over your peers. It just didn't matter. And it just brought the dark side on of a lot of people, and that's something I never enjoyed banking or trading. It's just people they become funny creatures when it comes to money, and the regulators, seeing that banks had especially in FX, which was a market that was not regulated, they decided to step in and now scrutinize every move the banks make. So it's always been difficult to make money, but you could always make a bit of a spread in when you get your flows. I mean, getting flows forces you to also take a view, to be more involved in the market. And I'm not going to say to say that it's easier to make money trading flows that is than prop trading. Yes, if the spreads are there. The problem is, since 2000, I think the early 2000, e-commerce started, I mean, all the different banks, different investment banks developed this tool whereby all the prices that trading desk would make would be directly sent to different customers. And so spreads over time just vanished. If I want to trade, if I want to bank a price from a bank, I would get a super aggressive bid offer spread because every bank wants to capture the flow, which is sort of what's happened with retail traders as well. I remember one of the reasons I was able to trade by myself or trade PA, my own capital. It's really, really easy and very, very cheap. All you need is a decent broadband and a PC with eight megs of RAM. And you're off to the races. And the prices, Walter, this is the amazing thing, the prices that you can get as a retail investor are pretty much the prices you get as a big bank.
Wow, that is amazing. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying you get the same treatment. I mean, your stop orders and your, there's a lot more slippage if you're a retail trader, but as far as the spreads, that's how competitive the industry has become.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting, the comment about the the slippage and the treatment that your orders get as a retail trader. So how would you suggest that retail traders combat that, knowing that that's the case? What's something that you would suggest?
Just be a little bit smart about how you leave your orders. If there's one time, I'm one where I don't want to know. I try to trade as technical as I can, but I'm obviously working for a bank. I'm fully aware of the big events. Do not leave tight stops over big events, or if there's an event that's going to cause a lot of volatility, just square up. If you have a tightish stop, if you're trading a low time frame, up to four hours, it's just not worth it, because you will get triggered time and time again, and you're always on the losing side. Yeah, I know that there are brokers out there that they're more benevolent, but it's a business for them. Even for a bank, if I leave a stop order over a weekend and the market gaps up, I'm done. If it is a buy stop, I'm done no matter what. And even though the market hasn't traded there, we've opened higher and done at my price, which is always worse.
Yeah. So how do you deal with that? Do you always just close down every at the end of the week, or how do you deal with that?
If I'm trading, I mean, the shortest time frame I would trade is 4 hours. So unless I got a trailing stop and I try to give myself enough breathing room. Okay, with stops, that's something I've learned the hard way, and I was obsessed with placing the stops in a special way. But I try to use it's a formula out there. I think it's in one of the videos. I think Darren mentioned this. I forget the name of the lady who gave the webinar, but it's two times the average two range. That's what I use at the very least. So, and if I'm trading the weekly or the daily, it doesn't matter. I would just let those run over the weekend. Not an issue. Not an issue.
Right. Yeah. But if you're close, so you're saying basically, if you're in a position and the week closes and your stop is kind of close to where it's, where the week ended, then you're in trouble when you come up.
Exactly, because the other thing, and I'll just mention this in passing, the other thing that banks, every day, every close of business, the orders get passed from a night desk in London to a night desk in New York, and then to a night desk in Hong Kong, Singapore, and so on. So it's a 24/7 market, and there are banks, and there's say a handful of banks that know where the stops are, and they get triggered. And it happens a lot. It happens a lot. You see, whenever you see a price action of a quick run to a figure level or and then the market comes right back, is because the stops have been triggered and now the market is stop free, and it happens all the time.
So they're like these little magnets sitting there on the chart waiting for the
Without getting too obsessed about where you should place your stops, I think my advice, but this is how I trade. I always want to give myself enough room, enough breathing room. I don't want to be, and I try to, which is tough. And this, about this, I've learned a lot from you, Walter, and Darren. It's okay to preserve your capital, but sometimes you've got to let your stop, be hit. Otherwise, you end up micromanaging your trade, babysitting your trade too much, and you will never let your winners run. Simple as that. And that's a challenge.
Yeah, that's a good point. What are now that we're on the topic, what are some of the other things that you think would be helpful to retail traders? Like you've mentioned a couple of things now that you coming at it from your perspective, you're aware of. What are some of the things you think that the average retail trader may not think about, and that's sort of top of mind for you?
Okay, well, let me start by saying the following. A lot of traders, and I've met some of them, and I've spoken to some, but there's a lot of traders in this forum that would work circles around most of the traders I know in the city. Okay, there's amazing people with amazing skills. Yeah, ever since I joined the forum, I've had admiration for them, for the likes of Nicola, for the likes of Rima, and so on, and people that haven't worked for banks, and they're just incredible the way they trade. What I'm getting with this is, I think there's a big myth out there that bank traders either have more information, have better skills, they're better at. That's not true. The one thing, if you can call this an advantage, the one thing that bank traders have is a boss that they have to report to. So every day you have to send this end of day report with your risk, and your P&L is worked out, and everyone gets to see that. So you're obviously accountable for your actions on a daily basis, and you get paid at the end of the month. Okay, so you're not trading your own money, and that is an advantage. But I have no choice but to sit in front of the screen for like 10, 11 hours a day, which is tricky, which is painful, which is hard, which is challenging when you have open risk. Because I can't just walk away and say, oh, I'm going, I'll be gone for 3 hours, because I don't want to tainted by the ongoing commentary, by the rolling news, by the events of the day, by the daily noise. That's definitely an advantage retail investors have, should they choose to put on the trade and walk away, which is something that I would strongly recommend.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about this before. So you feel that it's obvious to you, and someone sitting in your position, that you have so much information that a large part of your job, I suppose, is either filtering it out or just blocking it from affecting your positions.
That's right. And I do all the analysis, most of it, from home. at work. I just deal with admin, with emails, with conference calls, other stuff. But I don't plan my trades at work because it's just too much noise around it. And but what ends up happening more often than I would like is you just you break your rules. I mean, you hear something. There's a news event. There's a economic data comes out and that goes against you, and you start panicking, and you lose your discipline a little bit. It's just maybe you can deal with it once, twice, but the third time you're like, okay, well, yeah. Or you don't want to take the pain that day because you've already, I don't know, you're down for the week, and you don't want to show another big loss, and you do, which is, well, you make a mistake, which is commonly known as, you trade your P&L, and you shouldn't do that. You trade your trades. Your P&L is something that trade will either be a winner, a loser, or you end up breaking even. But it's not about trading your P&L. I mean, that's a recipe to lose money every time.
Right. So that's interesting. So essentially, you're saying when you trade your P&L, you're basically trading where you are with your account or the past or something like that.
Yes. So if for argument's sake, if I had a bad week, the closing rates are, my P&L for the day is going to post another loss, I'm like, okay, well, I would take risk off, or I would take some profit in positions that are profitable. I take profit too early, or I would, I'll cut back my risk too soon, breaking my rules, and then you end up regretting it. No matter what happens, because if it goes against you because you broke your rules, and if it goes the position goes back into profit, well, you're pulling your hair out because you're not being disciplined. You're not following the rules, which is very annoying. I hate doing that. So and sometimes, Walter, is the you end up putting on what's called the boredom trade. You're bored. You're not. You're fishing for ideas. You don't have a clear view, but you hear. Just finished reading a report, a macro economic report on something, and you're like, okay, well, that sounds interesting, and then you just put on a trade without, which would be fine if you then you're trading on the back of is this a fundamental analysis trade? But if you're going to apply your technical rules on a report that you just read, that's just. The minute that position goes a little bit against you, you're going to be closing it out because you're going to be, crapping your pants. I mean, it's just, and you know this happens. And one of the things that I've done that sort of helped me with this is becoming aware of these emotions is meditation. I still make mistakes. I mean, don't get me wrong. I make a lot of mistakes, but I'm very aware of them right away, and I can see myself in slow motion, doing the wrong thing. but it helps because it gets me out of trouble. And that, by the way, it's a big recommendation for any all traders out there. If you can get to a point where you become in tune with your feelings while you're trading, and don't become hijacked by them. It's half the battle, if not more. Because that's another big myth in the city is, you had to be, you don't have to become the idea. This was posted in many places and talked about. If you want to be a big swinging trader and super trader that's going to make millions, you cannot feel any emotions. You gotta be, cold as steel. And I believed that for a while. Okay, I did believe that for a while. But I couldn't disagree with that statement more. Now it's wrong. We all feel it a different way. I mean, certain people don't feel anything. I mean, I do, and I know I have very good friends working, partners at hedge funds here, and they tell me, like, man, even after 10 years, I put in a trade and it's the waiting game. They feel pretty much the same they did the first time they traded, and it's just how you deal with those emotions. I know this gets repeated in the forum time and time again, but man, it's true. That's how it is.
Yeah. So you really, it sounds like to me, hearing this, your meditation practice has helped you become more mindful and aware and accepting of this, rather than trying to fight it and say that I'm going to put these aside and they're not going to affect me. You've just sort of embraced them and accepted them for what they are.
Yes. And it's and sometimes all it takes is to just get up and go for a to go get a coffee, or just break the just get out of the the moments that you're in. Those emotions are okay. We have to feel. We're human. It's okay to feel emotions, and it's just understanding where they come from, and just sit on them. But what I do is I have a copy of my trading rules next to my desk, and whenever I see I'm getting emotional, I glance over there and I'm like, okay, well, that's not part of the those are not the rules. But sometimes you end up self-sabotaging the whole thing, because again, that's part of being human. Your self-critic, your voice inside tells you, well, I'm gonna do it anyway, and you do it knowing full well that it's wrong. But at least it's something that it would happen to me a lot in the past. But meditation is, like I said, I can't recommend it enough. Yeah, it doesn't have to be 20 minutes. It's just 10 minutes, whenever you can. Just breathe in, breathe out. Enjoy the, be grateful and appreciate all the things that you have. It's just something that I don't do enough. And if I can give another great tip, a smile and just be thankful and grateful whenever you have a chance, and it's incredible how that will change your mindset right away, and it will help you face the same reality that you're going to face, but with a big smile. It's you're on top of things.
Yeah.
Sorry if I'm going a bit off track here, but it's something I strongly believe in, and it's helped my trading immensely. So I want to share that with you guys.
Absolutely, that's great. I mean, there's a big debate in emotions research and psychology, which is which comes first, the smile or the emotion. In other words, if you smile, can you create that sense of joy in yourself, rather than having the sense of joy lead to a smile? So that's a huge I think that's a great tip, and that's beautiful. So really, Raul, it sounds like to me what you're saying is that a lot of retail traders probably don't understand how, the advantages that they have. I mean, they look to the banks, they think that they have all of these things at their fingertips. In some cases, that's true. But it sounds like to me that, in essence, you do most of your trading decisions at home, and then you do a bunch of admin, stuff at work, and then you have to kind of suffer through the trades as well, right?
and then I get home, and my wife's like, what the hell are you doing? How are you trading at home as well? I'm like, well, and it's hard to explain to her that, well, I'm in the office. It's just, there's no way. Kind of work I can get done in the office is update my charts and just do get a bunch of printouts and analyze at home. But the analysis will happen at home. And yes, like you said, every day the challenge is to tell myself when I go in, just follow your rules, don't get sucked into the daily noise. I mean, if I can give an example of something that happened just recently, that how you can get sucked into the daily noise. A few weeks back, I was long euro sterling. I took on a 4-hour time frame. I put on the trade on a Thursday, and it was going okay. I was happy. I pulled the trigger. I set my stops and a couple of and had a trailing stop for the profit as well. So, but just really one day into the trade. So come Friday, big news breaks out on Deutsche Bank. They have to pay a huge bill to the Justice Department in the U.S. Their share is tanking. Everyone's talking about Deutsche Bank. Euro dollar is, there's a lot of selling. Leverage accounts, all kinds of accounts selling euro dollar, and I'm I see euro sterling go from a hefty profit down to now I'm down on the trade. I'm like, what's going on? And then the more I'm reading about this news story, the more I get freaked out. So what do I do? I the minute euro sterling was back to my break even, I'm like, okay, I don't want to have this position on the over the weekend. I'm out. Guess what happened by the end of the day? Euro sterling was off to the races because the news was completely, was just utter noise. It's just noise. It's just daily noise. It could have happened. Yeah, could have sent euro sterling 200 points lower. Yes, I broke the rules and all I could hear and read about was Deutsche Bank and bearish euro dollar. And yeah, and your mind, those emotions will take over. And it's hard. It's hard. And unless you walk away, unless you're not reading this stuff. Because I think it goes back to one of the challenges we have as traders, and that is, you know, you don't want to be, being wrong is not a pleasant feeling. And that, if you like, reignites those bad emotions. So you run for cover, and you end up hating yourself for not following the rules. It's not about making or not making money. It's just not sticking to the rules, which is it's trading 101. You know, no trader will ever make it or will ever be profitable or consistently profitable if you don't follow your rules. It's as simple as that. So.
Yeah, so you spend a lot of time on focusing on execution, and it sounds like your rules, next to your monitor, essentially, yeah, you're trying to keep you on track. What are some of the things that, like, this idea about having to be accountable every day for your P&L, can you talk a little bit about the pros and cons of that? Like, in a lot of ways, that's really... I can see that being very positive, and we encourage traders to do that, find an accountability partner. But in other ways, I can see where it's also a negative.
Yes, and you're spot on. It's being accountable for your trading. It's a must. It does help. It will stop you from overtrading. It will stop you from breaking the rules. You have to be accountable in the beginning. And that's great. That's great. You have a trading buddy or trading buddies that you can share this information with. What happens in the bank is everyone gets to see your P&L, okay? And you can get a bit paranoid about that stuff. I mean, after a string of losses, you feel like everyone is watching you. Like it starts to have an impact on your confidence. Because you feel you're being judged, and there's nothing worse that can happen to a trader. That's when your confidence starts taking a beating. The irony is you're in a downward spiral. You've hit a losing streak, but you have to stop trading until you get your confidence back somehow. And having to report your P&L daily to your direct boss, to your boss in whatever it is, head office is, everyone gets to see that. It's very transparent, and I think that can be detrimental to one's confidence. That's my own opinion. It's good for risk control purposes, but I think it encourages also this ego macho mentality. It's like, I'm making millions, everyone should shut up. I can do and whatever I play. I mean, it does. It's not good for your ego either. So as a retail trader, you're not exposed to that. And I think having an accountability partner is just a friendly way of making sure that you're walking right down the line. You're not going. You're sticking to your rules. You're being disciplined, and you're not over trading. And when you have to. And this is an exercise that it's highly recommended. And this is why I think a lot of people in the forum, record their trades. It forces you to think about, why you're taking the trade. And that's a great thing. That's a great analysis. You shouldn't overanalyze stuff, but by all means, just play the tape in your head. It's like, and go through the different rules you have and why it makes sense to put it on, and then go with it. If you don't have an accountability partner, it's like doing testing in Forex Tester and going back in time and cheating. Yeah, you're not being true to yourself, and in the beginning, you need that push. It's good not to feel alone, and that's why one of the reasons I love the forum is it's a great community, and people get they feel they're part of this huge family right away, and they're getting advice from very, very, very good traders. It's great to see Walter.
It's you've made me think here, Raul, that I wonder the difference between I'm a retail trader, I have an accountability partner that perhaps I speak to every weekend, and then I have this bank that or I have the alternative, I'm working at a bank, so if I'm talking to my accountability partner on the weekend, my accountability yes. partner in theory should really be looking to see if I'm executing my system as I should. Whereas the bank That's right. isn't going, your bank, they're not, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're not going to say, Raul, are you sticking to your system? They're going to say, Raul, how much money did you make today? Or how much money did you lose today? Right? The pressure is not on execution. It's on delivering P&L.
That's right.
Yeah.
That is, Walter, that is spot on. That's what makes the being accountable at a bank so different from being accountable having a trading partner. Bank doesn't care less, my boss doesn't care less about the system I use. I think at one point I was too open with him, and I told him a couple of systems I was using to enter and exit trades, and he looked at me and said, well, yeah, please keep that to yourself and don't tell anyone, because you've told me too much information. I'm like, well, they don't care. All they want to see is the bottom line. You know, have you made money today, and how much risk you're running? Are you comfortable with the risk you're running, and what are you going to do when in this bank? And I think a lot of banks are similar. Before you hit your stop loss for the month, you have a pre-stop loss where, like, I don't know, 20%, 25% off your big stop loss, where you're supposed to, which I think is a great, this is a great thing, by the way. You're supposed to write an email or have a conversation with your direct boss and your boss's boss and tell him why you want to stay on the trade and why you think this is a good trade. And so basically you have to explain why you're not getting out of a position when you're down a lot of money. And that's what they should be doing on a daily basis. Whether you're up or you're down money is okay. What have you done today, and why, and why do you like this trade? That's a healthy discussion. But to be put into a room and say, "Well, you're down now. You're down a million for the month. Your stop loss is 1.2. What are you going to do?" So all of a sudden you start trading defensive, and that's again, it's not conducive to good trading. So that's Walter. That's spot on. The way these conversations are, the way they take place, the issues that are brought up have nothing to do with your execution, your exit strategy, or why you have a trade on.
That's fascinating. In a way, they're doing the right thing when they have with that pre-stop loss procedure that you go through. But day to day, it's just not there. It's the focus is on how much money you're making. Yeah.
Yes, and how much risk you're taking, and that's what one thing that is where banks have changed. And I know back in the day, probably there weren't enough controls, and that's why. We've had the scandals and the losses and that's why it was lack of regulation, lack of compliance, control. But we've just gone the other way. Where there are departments out there that would look at whether the daily tolerance. If when volatility picks up, I start getting calls. You traded at that level, but that's outside the daily tolerance. Is this a good trade? So this is how I spend my days, by the way, just dealing with this admin, just justifying my existence to compliance and the like. So,
right.
It's fun. You can't take it too seriously because, it's their job and, whatever. Yeah.
And you're there to do your job, which is to make them money. Yeah. And they approach it the way they know best, I suppose, which is what their procedures are. And dealing with compliance, like you say, which has grown. Like the issues and the concerns have grown over the last 10 years, haven't they? Yeah.
What I mentioned before about the working for being a consultant for this hedge fund specialized in financial litigation, I wrote one that was called a expert witness report. and one of the it was a bank being investigated for collusion, which to summarize, is when bank traders get together and they ahead of a fixing, popular one is 4 p.m. London time, and they all agree to either sell or buy a certain currency to move the fixing. Okay, that's happened way too often.
Okay, right.
But it goes back to this mentality where traders were incentivized to make money. Managers knew full well what was going on, and managers and the senior managers knew full well what was going on, but no one was asking questions when the profits were rolling in. So in the end, the poor trader became they either lost their jobs or they're in prison and don't get me wrong, a trader should never do that. But they just to go for the the little man. It's also not fair either. So when this as these scandals started breaking out, and they were investigations by the UK regulator, by the US, I mean all over the world, they then decided to make banks comply with all these different rules. So banks had to go out and hire a lot of people to deal with this compliance and risk and market risk and just monitoring every conversation a trader makes. So traders have abused this system, and it was all it was a good thing, and is now everyone is paranoid. Everyone is paranoid. You can't say the wrong thing anymore. Even as a joke. Okay.
Right.
You can't joke.
Right. Right.
Next thing you know, you get a phone call from compliance. Like, oh, we need to see you because you said the word X. You said the word front running.
Right.
And you're in the compliance. Just to come back a little bit to retail traders, they have a lot of good things going for them. Banks. I mean, working. I remember when I started working for a bank, it was I got in as a trainee for a Spanish bank in London back in 94, and it was just a training program for 3 months, and a lot of times back then, because there was a lot of jobs, you would get offered a full-time job, and it so happened it was in a dealing room. So, and that went on for years and years and years. To get into trading now for a bank, first thing, I don't recommend it. There's a lot of admin, no risk taking, you're not really allowed to trade. I think a lot of traders that I see in the forum could, if they put their mind to it and it's something that they really want to pursue, they could work for hedge funds or boutique shops and get paid a chunk of a percentage of what they make. They're good enough for that. Working for a bank, it just pays you a decent base salary if you're a flow trader, and you have no upside, as in, because you're not supposed to take risk. It's no matter what, you're going to get paid X. So you no longer appreciate the, you don't have the freedom to trade when you trade for a bank. I suppose that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So I guess, because one of the questions that's going to come up here is how did you get into the bank? And essentially, it sounds like when times were different, when they had a lot of trainee programs, that's how you got your foot in the door, and then it just kind of blossomed from there for you.
Yes, and I've traded, I think, 7 banks in London. It was a lot of, I followed my boss to 3 different banks, and there was a big turnover of people. I mean, you stay in a place for 2 or 3 years, 4 at the most, and then a big project with we come up at another bank, and that was interesting, and you'd move. That went on a lot in London. I mean, I think very few people stayed at the same job for more than 3 years. Well, at least I didn't, and a lot of the people I know did the same. But then the redundancies started, and desks were moved to different countries. A lot of traders. Move to hedge funds or places where they would find some sort of financial upside, because trading for a bank was, especially I think it was 2008, 2009, trading desks had record years in terms of profits, and people didn't get paid, and rightly so, also, because banks lost a lot of money, and it was just awful. You know, there's a movie out there, The Big Short. I think that sums up what happened really, really well. And you know, every time I watch it, I've watched it like 5-6 times, I get depressed. You think, you know, how could we do this? How could we get so? How did we lose the plot in such a way?
So
the bank traders were incentivized to take risk up until 2008, 2009, and after that, it was just the regulators started coming up with they started regulating the FX market, which wasn't until then, and yeah, and the landscape is very different. But that's something I suppose I'm happy to talk in more detail at the conference, because there's many years to cover and many things to talk about. And anecdotes, I suppose. I'm happy to always talk about those.
Yeah, and maybe we can hear also, I'd love to hear at the conference this idea that, there are these excellent traders out there in the retail world, and yet, the banks don't get their hands on them. Or how do these, how do you as a retail trader who's built up a track record, how do you catch the attention of boutique firms, of hedge funds, of private funds? How do you get your foot in the door? Those are the sorts of things I think people will be very interested to hear.
I'm happy to. Well, let's just leave them waiting for those. I'm happy to. I have a few stories, true stories that I can tell, people that have made that move. And I can give some advice, but I'm happy to talk about that in the conference.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's fascinating to me. It's so fascinating to me because I've heard this before, which is that the banks would be amazed at what traders are doing in the retail world, and yet it seems as though banks and private funds don't necessarily have this pipeline where they're pulling these people in. It's almost like they're coming from somewhere else, which is fine. It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. It's just interesting that I can see the because you understand the dilemma, right? You have these traders who don't have a big stake, and they're trading quite well, and they don't want to wait the 5 or 6 years it takes to build that up. They want to get their hands on money right away, right? They don't want to wait that long to build up their stake. So, I can understand why that's the case. But, so it's fascinating that, it's sort of like the pros and the cons. Like, who's got what? The banks have the money, but they have to approach it from a different angle now, post-excessive regulation, post-GFC.
Yes.
And then the retail traders might have some really good approaches to trading, but yet they don't have their hands on the big chunks of money. So it's fascinating to me, yeah.
Yeah, but also, I think as a retail trader, you've never been in the best position to trade because the price you pay to access the market is minimal. And that's something that 10 years ago, spreads were much wider. You have to pay, put up a bigger margin. It would cost you more money to be able to access. And there weren't that many brokers around, and the spreads were obviously, 4 or 5 times what they are now. We can talk about these in more length, but I think one of the, in my humble opinion, one of the things, having been on both sides, banks, because they've never done it, or very few people at banks have traded their own capital or had a day job and then another job trading or have traded for a living. That what matters to make it as a trader, to be consistently profitable, it has nothing to do with how much you know about macroeconomics, microeconomics, or technical analysis. Even it boils down to psychology. And very hedge funds get that. Okay, hedge fund gets that. The majority of retail banks know. And when you sit down with them, and I've had conversations with traders from other banks, you get funny looks. You get funny looks because there's a different set of beliefs out there. And fine, they're their beliefs, and they can, if it works for them, I don't have an issue. But don't come and tell me that what I'm thinking is naive or sometimes you get laughed at when you talk about psychology but that's okay. That's okay. So I think that's one of the barriers. Unless you have an amazing track record and you can tell the bank, I've traded my own capital for X amount of years and this is the results. it's tough because they say, where have you worked before? What's your degree in? I mean, do you know anything about economics? You know that? And yeah, you may. I can teach someone what they need to know about macroeconomics to trade in half an hour, okay, or an hour, and you're off to the races. If you can get the other stuff right, yeah, the macroeconomics aspect of trading matters little to nothing. I think that's one of the issues, in my opinion.
Right, that's fascinating. Yeah, it makes perfect sense, though. Yeah, and everyone comes at it from their own approach. So, yeah. Is there anything else, Raul, that you would like to leave the listeners with before we see you at the event?
I think we've covered. I can talk. There's stuff about e-commerce that I want to talk about, how that's changed the banking landscape. Maybe, you know, I want to talk about that in more detail. The compensation, how compensation has changed. Definitely want to talk about what a normal bank trader does, you know, on a day. I think that could be interesting for people to know how much time is wasted at a bank.
Yeah, so, okay, just one last question I have for you, because this interests me, because it'd be a contrast for the listener. So if you were not trading at the bank, and let's say you're trading for yourself, what would your day look like? What would that day look like?
Okay, I would get up in the morning, do a meditation, have a good breakfast, or maybe breakfast and then meditation. I would look at the charts for, like, 30 minutes, an hour, see if any triggers are closed, not. I just walk away, do some back testing, try to fit in an hour or two throughout the day, or an hour, have some lunch, go to nursery and pick up my son, have fun with him, look at charts, maybe at the London close just briefly, and then after dinner, just look at the closes, at 10:30. So amount of time spent looking at charts during the day, no more than 2 hours, and that's a lot. Versus amount of time you spend looking at charts at a bank, 10 hours. You know these stats, man. Yeah, how much information our brain can retain.
Yeah.
It's tiny. Tiny compared to the amount of information that you're bombarded with.
Yeah.
After a while, I mean, you go dizzy. You know.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference. And that's, again, going back to retail, difference between retail and banking as a trader. You're able to lead a much healthier life. Okay. Where you can enjoy the things that are fun. Because working for a bank is, I love trading. I'm passionate about trading, but there's a lot of things I got to do during the day that I have zero passion for. And as a retail investor, you get to choose what you can do and how you spend, how you fill in those gaps. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yep. That's excellent. Excellent, Raul. That's so cool. I really appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to seeing you at the conference and hearing more about how retail traders can get into the institutional world and your experiences and your war stories. I think it's going to be great.
That's great, man. Listen, it's been a pleasure to have this chat with you, to help traders gain more confidence in what they do, because they're amazing, all these retail investors, all the retail traders in the forum, and I cannot wait to spend more time with them and just talking about trading in the conference. I think it's going to be amazing.
That's great. Thanks so much, Raul. Yeah. We'll see you soon.
No
Thank
worries.
You.
Yep. Take care. Ciao.